Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, in our good martini, we've got just a tiny bit of a bitter aftertaste, but mostly it's good. The bad news is, apparently, the guy at the State Department a couple weeks ago was wrong. Apparently, the war on terror is not over. Somebody forgot to tell Al-Qaeda, because we have just uncovered the latest new version of Underwear Bomb 2.0. This has been now in the possession of the CIA for a little while. This time, we actually learned about it before somebody tried to wear it on a plane and blow hundreds of innocent people out of the sky. So something's working a little bit better in communications with other governments and so forth, and just general intelligence gathering. So kudos to the government for getting this one before a lot of lives were in peril.
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, this is the kind of ending to the story you want to see. The word is that at no point was this device good, you know, getting on the way to an airplane. So it looks like they had a pretty good handle on it from the beginning. But it sounds like the technology that they're using is more than a little bit unnerving, that there's some discussion that this, you know, because it had enough plastics and not enough, you know, metal and you know, explosive materials in it, it might have gotten through some airport security. The two things that I heard yesterday that were perhaps most disturbing about this is that, you know, viewers, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the Dark Knight movie, which came out a couple years ago. The Joker sneaks a bomb into somebody by surgically inserting it in someone. Apparently, you know, Al-Qaeda is contemplating that's the idea of, can you put a bomb inside a person's body and then at some point having that bomb detonate? And it's a particularly gruesome form of suicide bombing. And the report on CNN yesterday indicated that this is something there's not a lot of easy ways to detect and to stop under existing security procedures. So, Greg, if you thought the TSA checks were invasive before, how the U.S. would deal with that? The only good news is it sounds like the technical know-how of surgically inserting a bomb into someone is, you know, pretty considerable. And so whether Al-Qaeda will ever get a chance to pull that off remains to be seen, hopefully never. But again, to that State Department official who'd said the war on terror was over, it didn't take long for us to say, you know, this is when Al-Qaeda hasn't done anything for about a year, then I'll feel like saying, okay, the war on terror is winding down or something like that, or this is not the Al-Qaeda we knew. Clearly, we're dealing with the B team and the C team, but even the B and C team can, you know, look, murderous intent and an open society make for, you know, a dangerous combination there, and we need to stay vigilant. It looks like this was a happy ending, but we're now staring at a little bit of murmurs of wondering whether this was the only plot. So we'll just have to, you know, stay vigilant in the coming days.
Yeah, you mentioned what TSA horrors could be around the corner if the surgically implanted bomb could be encased. There are some questions about whether the amount of plastic, as you mentioned, used in this latest version of the underwear bomb would be detectable in the naked scanners. That's not the technical term, of course. But I think the smart way to determine that is to let the insufferably arrogant John Pistol, the head of the TSA, wear it and go through and then get the full body pat down. And along with him, anybody else in Congress or in government who thinks that the TSA and its current policies are doing a great job.
Yeah, so, in addition to the idea of putting this into various cavities, Greg, the other option that was mentioned in that CNN report was breast implants being used as a form of plastic explosive. So, ladies, you've been warned. Next time the TSA gets a little too intimate and a little too much time in that particular area, now you know why.
Jim, on to martini number two now, and you've described this very well in the morning jolt of the bright, shiny object strategy of the Obama campaign, that absolutely anything that could possibly distract the media, and let's be honest, they're more than happy to be distracted by anything the Obama campaign tells them to be distracted by, from his dismal economic record and otherwise pitiful policies on health care and in some areas foreign policy over the past 3.5 years, they're jumping on it. We saw it with the dog carrier on top of the Romney car from nearly 30 years ago. The latest issue is a woman who simply asked a question in a Romney town hall where she said she believes the president has committed treason and ought to be tried for it. Romney talked about the greatness of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. So because he didn't specifically denounce her, Jim, he clearly agrees with her. And so he needs to now come out and denounce that claim, which I think is ridiculous. You don't have to denounce the premise of every particular question at a town hall event. Plus, we might point out that the United States Senate Republicans are actually suing the president over his non-recess appointments. So the claim that he has violated the Constitution is not exactly far-fetched.
Greg, I received in the mail just this morning a sackcloth and ashes. Did you get that from the mainstream media? Apparently they're sending it to every conservative and every Republican that we have to wear them to because of this woman. Because she had the audacity and the nerve and the outrage to say the president that she believed the president had committed treason. Now, Greg, let's face it. The rhetoric like that is completely, completely out of line. To address a president who began his political career at the apartment of a guy who tried to blow up an army base. In light of this, we should just be ready for these sorts of things. It's a ridiculous standard. That basically all it takes is any mainstream media reporter to go to a Republican rally, encounter one person who's, you know, claims that their dog talks to them or some other crazy remark, and instantly this is considered, you know, the dangerous, out of control Republican base, and that the Republican nominee has to stand up upon. We saw a ton of this in 2008. It was this big plot point in the Game Change movie. What this basically tells us is that the media believes the Republican base is full of lunatics. Now, Greg, let's be honest. Our base has some lunatics. However, the leftist base has a lot of lunatics too. And Barack Obama rarely, if ever, is expected to. The other day, just yesterday, David Axelrod referred to the Koch brothers as assassins or hired guns or you know, contract killers was the phrase he used. Now, that's incendiary rhetoric. We're supposed to be really upset about this woman saying that Obama had, you know, committed treason, but Axelrod, you know, calling them, you know, the Koch brothers contract killers, that's hunky-dory. And, you know, it's a double standard. It's a ludicrous one. And it's one we could expect the media to be, you know, obsessed with and going bonkers over from every day until now until Election Day.
The biggest difference, I think, Jim, between the lunatics in one base and the other is that some of the lunatics in the left base are in the media. So therefore, they find something far more offensive if it comes from someone who's slightly on the fringe on the Republican side as opposed to their own people. And if you need an exhibit, check out their glorified coverage of Occupy Wall Street over the past several months, where the vast majority of these people are completely off their rockers. So speaking of separated from reality, let's go up to not surprisingly, the state of Massachusetts, Jim, which has decreed that since so many people are in danger of becoming obese, particularly among the kids in Massachusetts, that the way to solve this clearly is to end bake sales. No more fundraisers from bake sales. No more fundraisers from candy sales. No more candy sold at sporting events. And so clearly, that's going to solve the problem. So once again, here's the big nanny state jumping in and trying to dictate people's decisions. And I'm sure those tofu and celery stock sales are really going to make up for the bake sale losses.
You know, I'm trying to find the precise quote, but I believe that it was back in 2008, Michelle Obama was trying to discuss her husband's approach to economics, to governance, to the role of the federal government in society. And she used the metaphor of pie, which was kind of intriguing, in which she said that, you know, some people are going to have to give up a piece of their pie so that someone else can have more. Now, I believe that a couple of my readers had heard that and said, you know, look, I'm used to the Leviathan. I'm used to the invasive state. I'm used to a complicated tax code. I'm used to ludicrous regulations written by people who never have to follow them. I'm used to an out-of-touch Congress. But you cannot have my pie. and here we see. The left has decided to come after pie. Our first martini was all about people trying to kill us and blow up planes. And, you know, there goes government on patrol against, you know, bake sales. Heaven forbid somebody should, you know, eat a brownie or something like that. So, you know, remember this next time you see the president eating his waffle or some other starchy carbohydrate food or something. You know, this is Atkins America or something. We're just, you know, the war on carbs continues.
Just unbelievable. I think I'd still go out and buy a cupcake somewhere else, even if it doesn't actually raise funds for some noble school project, rather than, I don't know what they're supposed to be doing for fundraisers now, Jim. But good luck, everybody. Good luck, kids. Jim, have a good day.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.